Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to Stipulation, a TNA Impact podcast for the week of Wednesday, August 20th. My name is Dr. Nove, and I am joined by Brian this week to break down the Hardcore Justice episode of TNA Impact. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me once again.
Are you nervous?
Well, it's not that I'm nervous. It's just that, like, how many podcasts do I have to do before you will unchain me and let me out of my cage?
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Yes. It's good to have you back on again. All right. So what did you think of SummerSlam?
It was good. It was actually a really, really great pay-per-view. I would have not.
It was.
I wouldn't have complained if I'd have paid that money.
Better than WrestleMania?
WrestleMania was good. I don't know. It's right there on the same lines as WrestleMania, though. It's pushing. In a lot of ways, yeah.
Different story. SummerSlam is typically when the heel will grab that title, right? And that is what happened.
This is turn time.
Yeah. I liked the show. I liked the Brock Lesnar match a lot.
Stomp. That wasn't a match. It was a stomp.
Not quite a squash match. A stomp match. I like that. Because Brock Lesnar pummeled John Cena for about, 14 minutes or so?
Yeah, about 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that area. I remember thinking when the actual main event came on, I was like, you don't have enough time for this.
No,
I
know.
How is this going to work? We just did a 30-minute match right before, or almost 30-minute match right before this. How is it possible that you're going to have time? And then I realized quickly how that was going to
go. How we were going to do that. Yeah. How we were going to get there.
Yeah.
Good story, though. I mean, it was essentially Cena got that one AA hope spot that was not enough.
Yeah.
And he got the STF spot, and that was not enough. And other than that, it was Brock Lesnar right out the gate.
One thing that I was kind of surprised never came up from Heyman or Lesnar was the fact that basically, Cena stole the AA because it used to be the FU,
right?
Named
right.
after basically
after Brock Lesnar,
F5,
right?
Yeah, that just kind of surprised me.
I know it's a weird part of this is part of the PG era where it's now the Attitude Adjustment instead of the FU,
right? I get that, but
which is always kind of cornball.
Look,
but,
hey man, you stole the AA from me. You know you stole it from me. That's the same thing that I do.
Yeah, but then you have to. They can't mention that because then you have to direct the kids who are Cena fans to realize that John Cena's move used to be FU.
Yeah,
and no parent really wants their kid to learn FU from wrestling
from
of all things, and John Cena of all things. Yeah. Mr. Support the Troops,
Mr. Fruity Pebbles himself.
Mr. Fruity Pebbles, yeah. And his sponsors don't necessarily want that. Yeah. So I think this is just a part of John Cena's history that you can't necessarily go back to.
Yeah. What else did... Yeah.
Well, then we had, if we're working in reverse, we had the very long Orton and Reigns match that was not so much good as it was long. The finishing sequence was cool.
Finishing sequence was decent. I think the company's high, obviously high on Reigns.
Oh, man.
They're going to push
If you saw
Reigns
that Shield documentary that they put out this week, it's very, very clear. Oh, that I got a chance to see, and it's very good. It's an hour-long special on the Shield, and it's sort of... toes a line of kayfabe and shooting. Like, there's a little bit of real stuff in there. Like, Terry Taylor really didn't like Seth Rollins down in developmental, and they, you know, have that. They have some of that. They actually talk about that. But, you know, they also have Dean Ambrose training out in the desert for his match against Seth Rollins, and Seth Rollins is apparently a CrossFit man. I think that's for real.
Yeah, it probably is.
He's seen wearing a CrossFit t-shirt at some point.
CrossFit people are pretty nuts, dude.
Yes. And he was talking about the high he gets off of CrossFit.
Oh, I bet.
But when we get to Roman Reigns, and this is what made me think of this. When we get to Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman is even talking about Roman Reigns as the next champion, which is very important in the context of what we've got going with the Brock Lesnar storyline.
Yeah.
This is a guy who the company sees a ton in, and as lackluster as his matches have been so far, he will be pushed for a while longer, at least, just because of the heritage and also just where they're at with the guy.
Right.
But this hour-long special, you know, the network, we were complaining that there's just, like, not a lot of great stuff that's worth watching in the network, and some shit, it's hit or miss. Like, the SummerSlam backstage pass, which they put out right after Monday Night Raw, that was stupid. Like, I don't need to see a recap. And here's the worst part about that SummerSlam backstage pass that they put out. That was just the main event of SummerSlam in its entirety, and Stephanie and Brie, I guess the next match we'll talk about here in a second, in its entirety, with some limited backstage vignettes.
Yeah, like two little spots backstage.
Ric Flair says something that's real generic of just like, oh, wow, I was really stunned that... Brock Lesnar beat up John Cena. Yeah, it was, wow. And then Hogan's back there. He's like, brother, I need to go talk to John Cena. And that was really the most you got out of that entire thing, is that Hogan was going to have a conversation with John Cena. I guess maybe it would start with, hey, what's up, brother, with you taking my colors? All of a sudden you're wearing red and yellow all the time.
Right, yeah.
Brother.
I don't know. That sick of Cena. I don't care.
You know, I like it. I think that this opens up possibilities for his character if they want to go there. But I also felt like that right at the end of, was it Survivor Series, where he was standing with the Authority at a fallen Orton? With Orton, like, fallen at John Cena's feet.
Yeah.
And Stephanie and Triple H were behind John Cena.
Yeah.
That was an intriguing moment that went nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, it is time. Like I said last week, man, it's time for a turn.
Yeah.
In his career, I believe it's time for a turn. I don't know. I could be wrong, but that's what it seems
like. I think if you are really committed to Roman Reigns, and you also have a bed of other early 30s guys like Cesaro, like Dean Ambrose, like Seth Rollins, like Sami Zayn, Kevin Steen's coming in the wings, you've got Devitt coming up. You have this entire new crop of talent that will be able to quickly come in and populate the top of the card. In conjunction with guys like Sheamus, who Sheamus is still pretty young. He's got a lot of experience and some switch-ups in his character. He's a good wrestler. It's just the character's boring. And Kofi, I don't know. Can you salvage Kofi? That would be an interesting essay question, right? How would you salvage the Kofi thing? Xavier Woods is actually a good worker. He's just not given a gimmick with which to shine with at all.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know on Kofi. I mean, there's a lot of other...
Point being,
you could fill the top of that card really quickly, really easily. And then you'd have, I guess, you know, Reigns running through at Orton. And, you know, because you have to give him some of the older people. You run through Orton and a rematch, because at some point he's going to...
At some point, I think you've got to turn Big Show heel, and you've got to have Big Show and Reigns have a match.
I don't know.
But here's the problem.
But
Reigns, what does that match even look like?
I don't know, man.
Because Reigns doesn't have, like, dynamic striking ability. He has, obviously, the generic knock is that he's got about four moves. He's got that, you know, apron drop kick. He's got the spear. He's got the Superman punch. He's got a Samoan drop.
Right.
Am I missing?
No, not really.
That's his big four. But, you know, he could do a few other things. I've seen him throw a vertical suplex in here or there. It's just nothing has swagger. His vertical suplex is just a vertical suplex. It's not Roman Reigns' vertical suplex like some people have. Hell, Ryback. Ryback's vertical suplex has his stamp, his thumbprint on it.
Yeah.
It's done his way.
Right. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's a nice vertical suplex. You know, not to go... Welcome to Vertical Suplex Podcast, but...
Right. No.
You know what I mean.
No, he needs some more of just the regular... Your regular job moves. You need to be able to just kind of get through the match with...
His clothesline doesn't have a distinct clothesline.
Right.
Yeah.
You need to be able to... Yeah. Put your stamp on it, for one, but he doesn't even really even get into doing all of that. He doesn't even get into like doing like a hip toss or a drag.
That is true. Big looking hip tosses and just some basic power moves.
The very basic little moves that is interesting. Through. But he does have like the really nice power moves. And what's interesting about Reigns, one of the things that I noticed, I was telling you about this, is the difference in sell. With the spear,
yes,
between
the TNA spear and the WWE spear,
exactly. Yeah, the WWE spear, especially with Reigns, the tendency for whoever is selling it, they want to catch it, like
that's how Orton,
yeah,
catches the spear,
fold in half, really go down, you know, and go down hard. Whereas in TNA, they kind of clip them.
Yeah.
More than hit them, but they make it look just insane because you're going to do at least a full flip.
Those flips are nuts, right?
Yeah. Land on your back. Like, it's going to be a... either way, it looks devastating. I just happen to like TNA's a lot more because it looks like somebody's being thrown out of their shoes, you know?
Here's a fun essay question. Lashley, is he a better wrestler than Roman Reigns is at this point?
Silence on air.
I know. Yeah. Dead air. I mean,
yeah. That's a good question. I honestly don't know, because it's not that Lashley's booked well. Okay. I'm not going to sit here
versus Roman Reigns.
Well, so is Roman Reigns. But I'm not going to sit here and say that Lashley is nearly as talented as more than half of the TNA roster.
No, it's not about that. I'm just asking in a vacuum. Roman Reigns, Bobby Lashley, where they're at not right now, not their upside or anything like that, just where they're at right now, who is the better wrestler? Bobby Lashley or Roman Reigns? I feel like Bobby Lashley is too.
It's not by much, though.
Not by a lot.
Yeah.
And the other thing in that documentary with The Shield is they kept saying, he's a really quick learner. Well, we will see. Because Roman, with the trajectory he's on right now, needs to be learning a lot by Survivor Series.
Well, like I've told you...
Because he's got to win the Royal Rumble this year.
Like, I've specifically told you that I've seen a lot of leaps and bounds out of him just over the last month or two, where he's learned to sell a lot better.
So then where was that on Sunday?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, okay.
I don't know.
I got a chance to see him at the live show here. I got to see them live and in person working on their match for SummerSlam. And I didn't see anything compelling. The guy is perfectly average. He is fine. That's why I bring up Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley. Because I think whatever you think about Bobby Lashley, there's a plus or minus three, you know, let's say, on where you would put the other guy. Roman Reigns.
Yeah, within three, yeah.
Yeah, Roman Reigns' skill level, if you're out of 100, if you think Bobby Lashley's an 80, Roman Reigns is no greater than an 83.
Right.
Or no less
than 77. Yeah,
right.
I get you.
Yeah, somewhere right there.
Math.
Math, yeah. Sports games,
yeah.
Sports
math,
ball.
Math and wrestling. That goes.
Yeah.
It always goes together well.
Well, you know, people like math and
it's
wrestling.
Like marshmallows and peas.
Marshmallows and peas. People like marshmallows and peas.
I'd love it.
You just heat up the marshmallows and then the peas melt right into them.
Right in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yummy. All right. So we had Stephanie versus Brie Bella. This match happened, and Stephanie completely outshined Brie Bella. And Brie Bella looked like she was there. I mean, she did, you know, she lost the match, but she looked like she was there to put Stephanie over as the heel.
Yeah, no shit.
That's really the problem with that match.
Well, that and Breeze looked like an idiot on the microphone the entire time. I hate to say that. I actually like the Bellas a little bit.
But Stephanie's had moments where she shined, and you can't say that about Brie at any point.
Yeah, and she got the "you still got it" chance.
Yep.
She got the, she, I mean, she got she over, let, she had she the new outfit.
Yeah.
She had the new outfit one, which
she didn't help Brie. She didn't
crazy.
Help Brie at all. No. With, in terms of no. not, or calming the crowd down from getting into her. She just sort of let that happen and reveled in it.
Well, it seems like this was one of those, like, this is how it's scripted and we're not going to change it no matter what the... I mean, match and all. It's scripted to the T. This is exactly how we're going to do it.
You can still make the on-the-fly decision to...
See, I don't think Stephanie wanted to do that.
You can make the on-the-fly decision to not do the yes chance.
Yeah.
And not do some of that crowd stuff.
The Steph chance?
That was more Monday, right?
Yeah, but there's Steph chance now.
Sure, sure.
She's turned the chant.
It's bad. Yeah, Brie Bella actually may have hurt, to that point, Brie Bella may have hurt Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, by looking like an idiot doing, and then getting...
Wow, residual suck is rubbing off on Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And then getting smacked.
By Nikki.
By her sister. I don't have a problem with the turn, but like you were saying before, man, if you're going to do it, then dedicate yourself into it. And just go ahead and smack her and be pissed or be upset that you have to do it because you're getting paid or something like that and be really upset and worried that you're going to get in trouble for it or you're doing something wrong and then slap her because you have to.
And
you
like,
don't get upset about it after.
Right. It was so weird because Nikki hits Brie, looks angry, walks up, looks pensive. Next night on Raw, completely decides that this was a really cool thing that she did.
Yeah.
And if you were, with the story that she told, which was generic and boring, but is a story that is contingent on you building up hate over a long period of time, there would be no like, oh, I don't know, I feel sort of emotional about this thing that I did. Like, no, you would have done it and it would have, you know, felt like a very cathartic moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and you would have seen that in that the initial moment on SummerSlam. The problem being, like, she sat there after she smacked her on the side of the ring, staring at her, looking like she's going to go into tears or looking like something's going to happen, commentary suggesting that she got paid, she sold out, yada, yada, yada. I don't know, but if you're going to do it that way, if you're going to storyline it that way, you should be upset before you do it, before you actually hit the person.
I think she should have done it like Seth Rollins did and just keep hitting him with a chair until the chair bends.
Yeah.
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 Really make Brie Bella pay. Beat your sister's brain in with this steel chair.
Just stomp a mud hole right in the middle of the
you
ring.
You don't want any ambiguity.
No.
You don't want any ambiguity.
This is how I really feel.
Yeah. Well, and also, if you're going to bury Brie Bella, why not just bury her completely? Because I don't know. I felt like this match did not do Brie Bella any favors.
It didn't. It was kind of neat to watch Steph, though.
No, Steph was
good. I'm not going to lie. It was neat to kind of watch her. It was not in the context of the storyline.
Are we going to have whatever. A rematch? I feel like the way they've written it so far, we're supposed to have a rematch. Or this match was written, like, if it went well.
Well, I feel
we
like
we would
at
have
some
a WrestleMania
point,
rematch.
I feel like at some point, Steph might have to get a tag partner.
Well, she'll have Nikki.
Well, I'm talking about after Nikki turns back, because there's going to be that turn at some point as well. Because she has to go back to her sister. You know what I mean?
No, she doesn't.
Yeah, she does at some point.
Well, I mean, I guess
within the story, at some point she has to go back to her sister.
What could happen is that Brie joins her sister. Brie goes heel. That's the more interesting next turn. I've never actually bought the Bellas as a babyface team.
Yeah, they are.
It was done arbitrarily last year, and it's never really worked. And when they were doing the Slammies earlier this year, the Bellas were getting the shit boot out of them.
Yeah. And well, I mean, we'll see. I guess
they're heels. They're natural heels. They have
well. This
that
is a
face.
Fun way for them to figure out who's going to get the more heat, and whoever gets the more heat, basically, you go that direction. I guess that's how
I don't know. I feel
it.
Like that experiment would work if they were good. The experiment would be a good experiment if they were good.
There's a lot of ifs and goods.
A lot of ifs.
If good was happening.
If good was happening.
Then good could come out of it.
Yeah, good could be done well.
Nailing it.
So. Are you ready to talk about the Stairway to Janus, baby?
No, yes.
Oh, man. There's a monster I know.
And he wants the
nails on a pole. So he's climbing the stairway. On a pole.
So he's climbing the stairway.
All right. So the Stairway to Janus match. This is a ladder match wherein a wooden pole with the nails through it is suspended. And you have to climb a ladder to get Janus. But it's not entirely clear that you need to get Janus, but even once you get Janus, you then can use Janus to score a pinfall or submission.
Right. So how do you win?
You win by pinfall or submission.
Pinfall or submission.
It's not clear if Janus is like a checkpoint in the middle of the race that you have to get to. Yeah. But I don't think it matters because Abyss is still eligible to win the match once Bram has Janus.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter who gets Janus, but if you climb the ladder, you get it.
So here's my thing. If, this is just what I would do.
Sure.
If I were in the match, you know, just the psychology of the match in general, I would kind of let you climb up and go get Janus.
And then shoot him.
And then shoot you. And then knock the ladder over as soon as you get Janus off. Take Janus from you, hit you, pin you. Done with the match.
You could do what that crowd wanted and set them on fire.
You could set them on fire, yeah.
That's a cool idea.
We want fire, and then they gave a TNA chant, too.
When I think TNA, I think people being lit on fire. That's what I like about wrestling. The part where they're lit on fire.
I mean, we've gone back and forth on this type of match. This is a match.
No, we haven't, because there's never been a Stairway to Janus match, at least been doing this show.
The stipulations are whatever.
Yes.
It's a hardcore freaking match. So they throw in.
This is going to be the third time that Bram beats Abyss in a very, very, very similar match to last week.
Yeah. It's almost.
A match with an obstacle course.
Yeah. They're almost exactly the same. There's the tacks, there's the ladder, there's the razor wire boards that they both go through.
It seemed like Magnus bladed himself. Bram bladed himself hitting the stairs or whatever.
Yeah, he's over there for a second while Abyss is getting his table, or no, getting the razor wire boards out. And then you go back, pan over to Bram, and he's got blood.
I mean, I'll give it to Bram. He's committed to doing this, you know, Bram Ambrose character that he is doing. Bram Rose.
Bram Rose, yeah.
That just rolls off the tongue, really.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This fills that void for the people that like the sadistic, I guess, fans.
Sure,
the ones that
sure.
are like, we want blood. And we want
just
fire,
New York crowd.
And we want...
Yeah, the New York crowd, and it is an opener match, and you gotta love Abyss being willing to go out there and just do these type of matches.
I mean, that's what he's here for. It's what he does. It's really weird. I was watching some...
And Bram, for that matter.
Well, Bram actually takes way more of a beating than Abyss does. It's really weird, because I was watching some Impact from about a year, almost a little over a year ago. And it had Joseph Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess missed that little curveball that they had for a little while there.
Some people would say you didn't miss it.
I didn't pay attention to it. But I didn't know that was Abyss.
You didn't live it. Yeah. You definitely didn't live it.
I didn't know that was Abyss. I would almost rather see this jumpsuit guy in this hardcore match actually being hardcore. I would rather see
jumpsuit Joseph Parks in the X Division. I think that's a much more interesting story.
But he can't.
Samoa Joe's limits. Fucking
weight limits.
No
weight limits.
There's no limits. It's not weight limits. It's not weight limits. No limits.
Weight limits.
No limits. Kurt Angle said, Commissioner Angle said, it is no limits in the X division, my friend.
Whatever.
The X stands for no limits.
Principal said.
Yes.
Mom said.
Whatever.
Don't.
There's rules.
Yeah, there are.
Anyway, I mean, this is the same match that we saw the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, right?
He takes it in the belly.
This is the third time that Abyss has been beaten by Bram.
And takes it in the belly again. And what would be really fun is if Magnus came out next week and had, like, 30 2x4s painted black with a bunch of nails in them. It was like, here, guys, it doesn't matter anymore. We have a ton of them. Y'all enjoy. I don't know. You're fighting over a stupid...
It's
a named
piece Bram of wood. Doesn't actually say, I'm doing this to hurt him.
No,
there's
he doesn't
never
because
any
he
motivation
feels good
for
Janice.
Bram.
It makes it feel, yeah.
It's just he... I mean, I guess you could say that's what makes him patently evil. He just wants to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
But... I don't know. Am I supposed to feel sympathy for a bit? There's no story here.
No.
It's just these are just guys having these knockdown, drag-out matches with no stakes.
Yeah.
The stakes is it's a wooden pole with nails driven through it.
Yeah.
And you get to hit the other guy with it. And even then, that's not like the winning.
I mean, this is just one of those matches where if you let your mind go and don't pay attention, you might enjoy it.
I guess if you didn't see last week.
Yeah.
If you weren't at the previous show.
If you don't pay attention to storyline and you don't really care and whatever, then you might enjoy it. I could see somebody being like, oh my God, this is so great. This is awesome.
But if you're watching week in, week out.
You hit Abyss.
Shouldn't have done that.
You just hit the wrong person.
But if you're watching... Beating a guy three times it doesn't mean anything to beat someone three times, especially not clean.
Yeah, it's not a turkey.
Next month, John Cena has invoked his rematch clause against Brock Lesnar, but obviously, I say it feels pretty obvious that Brock Lesnar is going to beat John Cena again next month at Night of Champions.
Right.
I think that's going to be a slightly longer match than this one.
Right.
But I think that Brock Lesnar will beat John Cena, and maybe this time we get the tap-out scenario where John Cena gets completely broken. But yeah, it seems to me that that's where we're going for WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar as the ultimate champion.
Right. But yeah, you're not going to strap him three times. You're not going to...
No, they're not going to trade belts or anything. Yeah.
No. I'm saying
and you're certainly not going to have
John Cena three times.
You're not going to send John Cena... And if Brock Lesnar beat John Cena a third time, it wouldn't mean shit.
Yeah.
Like it would be sort of anticlimactic because
mean anything unless it was a
something.
Split in the first two.
Right. Exactly. And it means something in the context of if Brock Lesnar beats John Cena twice and they're both pretty decisive, that means something. And in this case, Bram has beaten Abyss twice. And while you wouldn't say they're like decisive, not like this.
They were his matches.
They were matches that were on Abyss's home territory.
Abyss's specialties.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So, Magnus is going into his house and winning and has his number. And that is the story
and
they're trying to tell.
And taking a beating and blah, blah. I get it.
That's the story they're trying to tell. I will give them that. Commentary does put that over. It's just...
It's a juvenile storyline.
It's a weird storyline.
You know, where you kind of take your thinking cap off and just
you have to be next we get
simmer
EC,
in ignorance
next we get EC3 backstage. EC3 says he knows the real bad guy. Then I'm just gonna power through these backstage segments tonight because they're almost all one sentencers. Next we get Magnus and Bram backstage teasing tension because them getting wins in singles competition makes them think that one is the better wrestler than the other, and I don't know, just weird. Magnus suddenly cares about the belt again. He's going to get it back.
His blood, and Bram's blood is gone.
But
already.
Yeah, Bram,
that was fun.
He's healed.
Yeah, he's healed.
He's in better shape
after
his match. Sweaty, wet, or bare minimum wet.
Yeah.
But yeah, he is in fine shape following the match. EC3 comes out to the ring. There's a weird cut. He's angry. There's lots of edits. The crowd chants, yes. Ethan Carter says, very quickly, no.
No. All matter of fact.
EC3 says that it is all Rhino's fault. He had time to think about it in jail last week. Rhino grabs the microphone and gives his best promo to date. I don't even know that I can approximate the... I can get the right now, but I can't get how like his voice kind of warbles in and out between crack mode.
Yeah, I don't... I might be looking at a dead man. I don't know.
It's quite the thing. That
he nails a thing.
Whatever he's doing, he nailing it's definitely the way I would describe that.
Yeah.
And he also says that he's going to be a bitch. And EC3 says, would a bitch do this? And then slaps Rhino.
With a bitch slap. Because that's what a bitch would do.
And then kind of hits him with some T-Rex punches because he doesn't want to tear his jacket. And then takes off his jacket and proceeds to beat the shit out of Rhino. And Rhino gets no offense in during any of this.
Nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing. It was really pathetic. To be honest with you. Considering the fact that, especially EC3 hits him or slaps him right off the bat with his little bitch slap. And looks at him like he just, you know, broke mom's best china and is just scared to death. And
then he's just like, well, okay, I guess
he gets over it real quick. And then
I guess if I upset Rhino, I just need to beat the shit out of him now, which is, I mean, really probably the right answer psychologically, but why this match now, whatever this Rhino and EC3 feud ends up being, where I'm assuming that Rhino will lose to EC3. I don't know. It's TNA and I haven't read the spoilers that far ahead, but I can only assume that Rhino loses to EC3 here.
Yeah.
This makes him look incredibly weak going into that. It would be one thing if, you know, EC3 slapped him, Rhino pushes him off the ropes, EC3 kind of, you know, ricochets off the ropes, and Rhino spears the shit out of him.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we're going to get an EC3 gore probably next week or the week after.
But the thing is, it has to look like Rhino is going to beat EC3 going into the match, and right now it looks like EC3 is going to beat Rhino going into the match.
Yeah, the way the booking's going.
EC3 just beat the shit out of him.
But
he had to take off his jacket. The beating was going so well, he had time to take off his jacket.
I think you'll be okay, though. Because I feel like EC3 is the type of guy that you can throw the script at him and be like, hey, man, this wasn't working right this way, so you're going to need to do this a little bit differently so that we can sell Rhino better. Gotcha. And I think he can nail it. He's a promo guy. He's a talker. He's a good wrestler too, but I mean, I think he can nail that for you, and it won't be that big a deal.
Well, we will see in weeks to come here. Let's move on. Ken Anderson has a Don't Smoke video package on TNA, and normally I kind of find these annoying, but Ken Anderson's at least coming from the perspective of a guy who used to smoke and then quit. Those are the only people who have any context of how hard it is to smoke or quit.
Right.
It's always just annoying when you have anti-smokers who are like, I never smoke cigarettes because I'm not an idiot. Like, Kenny Anderson has a much more realistic story, because if you're trying to get people who smoke cigarettes to not smoke cigarettes, sneering down your nose at them when you might be a square, that's probably not helping your argument.
Yeah. It's not going to work.
It's not. Nah, that's not how you do it. But I thought that this was pretty effective. I enjoyed this. Next, we got the Hardys backstage. Jeff tells us that the enigmatic journey that he is on fire. The journey is on fire, man. And
he is so entertaining.
Jeff Hardy?
Yeah.
I want to see, like, a backstage vignette where he's putting, like, face paint on his face. And Matt just kind of, like, looks at him. He's like, what's the deal with it tonight? And Jeff Hardy's like, has some crazy, weird, you know, circular explanation about journeys and mysteries and enigmatic charisma.
Yeah, I don't
know. It's a charismatic mystery that is on fire during the enigma.
Yeah, I want to see him have a conversation with Willow.
Have Matt dress up as Willow.
Yeah, you could.
He gives Matt permission to be Willow. And Matt's just like, no, I'll pass. I think I'll... You can keep that. That's cool.
I'm done with it.
That's cool. It's all you.
It's your thing.
Next, we get a Low-Key and Joe package for their singles match for the X Division title that comes up. This match is pretty good. I really enjoyed this match. There's a good opening section where Low-Ki and Joe are feeling each other out, that finally we move into the next section with Low-Ki slapping a cross arm breaker over the ropes so that Low-Ki is hanging outside. The match kind of continues along with them trading offense back and forth until eventually Low-Ki tries to go for the Ki Crusher. He is not able to get the Ki Crusher. Joe reverses into a powerbomb for a two count, then into a modified Boston Crab, which he transitions into an STF. This is a really nice looking spot. You get the crowd going. The crowd's really hot for this. This is a good match. It really is. Then, eventually, Joe gets the Muscle Buster for the W. And that is the end of your match. I don't know. How long was this match? About 10 minutes? We should run the stopwatch one of these times.
I don't normally pay attention to that.
Yeah, I know.
It was like a 10 or 12 minute one.
Yeah, but it had some time to breathe. There was enough phases in this match, and it had kind of a
it was a really
mid-card,
easy like
big
flow,
show feel.
Pin, flow, pin, turn, flow, pin, flow, pin. You know, to where each person got to showcase for a minute. Samoa Joe, I've been ragging on him for weeks. This was a good match.
No, he got
him
up for this match.
He got up.
Because it's one
he
of his
did
buddies.
Really good. It was really funny that at the beginning of the match, the commentators even say, basically...
Oh, yeah, what's that backhand?
He can really turn it up. No one can turn it up like Joe.
Or I thought it was something like when he sets his mind to it. Yeah. That was another... There was a couple of backhanded compliments towards Joe.
You know, and it's true. It's true. I have a note that says Low-Ki kicks because his kicks were like done. If you watch it back, his kicks are normally the best thing that he does, but there's a couple of times where he has to like take his time with his kicks so that Joe can get into place or whatever. And
he didn't go deep into the arsenal. Like he didn't do any of those kind of cool hook kicks and stuff that he does.
Yeah. Like he tried to do that one where he's on the ground and he kind of goes up on his elbows and throws his feet straight up in the air.
Yes, yeah, and Joe wasn't...
And he wasn't really in position, and he had to do it kind of slow and clunky.
It didn't look good.
The match still ended up being good, but you could tell where it was like Low-Ki... I mean, Low-Ki is just kind of...
I thought
he should be
Joe's,
the champion, really. Low-Ki
well, yeah,
should
Joe,
be the champion.
If you are going to actually have a thing called the X Division wherein you are allowing your juniors and your smaller guys... to have space to wrestle where you're not thinking about size with those guys. Because that's the whole point of having a cruiserweight division is that size does not become the operant part of the story.
Right.
You saw it with Low-Ki and Joe. Joe is substantially bigger than Low-Ki.
Yeah, and it's just kind of, it's one of those
which
things.
Which is why it's ridiculous that Samoa Joe is the X Division champion if the X Division is supposed to be about cruiserweights.
Whenever I'm being entertained by sports entertainment,
yes,
pro wrestling, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm watching it as a fantasy.
Right.
A fantasy to say, like, I'm not a big guy. I'm, you know, tall, skinny, white guy. I don't, whenever I'm watching these wrestlers, I want to look at this wrestler and kind of live vicariously through one of them. And normally it's going to be the underdog considering my build and who I, you know what I mean? I don't want to sit and watch the big guy beat up a bunch of littler guys. I don't want to watch that. It doesn't appeal to me. It doesn't make...
It's
as
true.
Much as this was
Samoa
a good
Joe
match,
as a babyface is fighting these challengers who are the natural underdogs to Joe, and he has a natural advantage. And, you know, it's not that Low-Ki's not a credible wrestler. It's just that you put him in a ring next to Joe... How impressive is it that this much larger man beat a much smaller man?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day...
You know, especially a much larger man with martial arts training versus a much smaller man with martial arts training.
Yeah, like...
You know, it's
that's
certainly
cool.
No shame to Low-Ki. You could say that he's equally good at his skills and just not able
It was
to...
a great match.
No,
it
was.
A great just... match, arguably the best night of the best match of the night.
I don't know. I was going to say the Gail Kim Angelina match. That performance, like the angle was stale, but that match in a vacuum was actually a pretty strong match.
It's between the two of those matches. But this, it's arguably the best match of the night. And I still have a problem with it because of the fact that Samoa Joe, to me, just doesn't belong. You're the biggest guy in the division.
There are no limits in this division.
There are weight
there
limits.
There are no limits in this division.
There's one. There's at least one that I can think of.
No.
And it's called a weight limit.
It's not. That doesn't exist. Joe was put in there to reinvigorate The X Division.
I don't want
I wonder if maybe he has a special exemption that allows him in, him alone in. So he's the only heavyweight in an entire division of
I wonder if he has like this weigh-in clause where he weighs in and they're like...
I get to calibrate the scale. Oh, look, 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Made it.
What was the... It's 230.
Yeah, it's 230. 230
is the weight limit.
Oh, look.
Supposedly.
I get right in, 225.
Yeah, nailing it.
Just like last month. I'm really good at maintaining
228, man, I was pushing it.
Oof. Oof. But yes, this was a good match. Afterwards, the Hardys have a special backstage meeting with the Dudleys. That's really all you need to know about that. We get an odd Anderson promo where he thinks Gunnar's a freaking idiot. And thinks that he's crazy. Sam Shaw does his best Jumpin' Jack Farmer impression and tells Motley Crue's Ken Anderson that he cheated him and that he will apologize to Gunner now.
His buddy.
His buddy.
Your friend Gunner.
Your friend Gunner. You will apologize to him now.
For that.
For that. And Sam Shaw and Anderson start fighting backstage, which leads us in to our I quit match. Somehow the tech guy just makes the executive decision that these two guys fighting means we should play Ken Anderson's music. And Sam Shaw and Ken Anderson are fighting on the ramp to Ken Anderson's music, which cuts out. Gunner eventually comes out, and this is an I quit match, and we've already seen Ken Anderson strangle Sam Shaw with an extension cord, begging the question, why wouldn't you just keep strangling with an extension cord until he passes out? Or would that not qualify as quitting? Anyways, Gunner comes out, and as just the greatest friend to absolutely nobody, apparently learning from the Roman Reigns school of friendship, Gunner stands by and watches Ken Anderson beat the shit out of his other friend, Sam Shaw, who he's supposed to be protecting, who he's actually legally required to be protecting. And one, you know, might think that an episode wherein Ken Anderson, his former persecutor, albeit for obvious reasons, this is a guy who was persecuting Sam Shaw. This is a situation that a mentally fragile man probably shouldn't be in. The Bo Bergdahl of wrestling doesn't need to be in this situation with Ken Anderson right now.
He really shouldn't. It's not fair to him or anybody else. Here's my problem. Who am I rooting for?
I don't know, because Sam Shaw keeps asking or asks Ken Anderson to say he's sorry to Gunner, not once but twice, once backstage, and then again out in the ringside area. And Gunner's out there, and Ken Anderson says no, he's not sorry about hitting Gunner or, you know, pushing Gunner and being a jerk last week. And, you know, he's not going to quit. And this gets a crowd, you know, response, especially because Ken Anderson keeps calling him a creepy bastard. Which, if Ken Anderson's supposed to be the heel, then why is he using the chant that he used when Sam Shaw was
the
heel? Because Sam Shaw has been doing babyface things recently.
Yeah, he's trying to be the good guy, whatever.
Yeah, not you know, the least of which was standing in line to get hit in the face by Bram when Bram was, you know, hitting everyone with the turnbuckle thing. That was cool.
Yeah.
Sam Shaw's been working as a babyface, and it seems like his intentions are true, if you want to go with that wording. I don't understand how I'm supposed to feel. That's actually like one of my notes. I just don't, like, I was watching this match, and I had no clue who I'm supposed to, you know, feel, or what I'm supposed to feel, or who I'm supposed to be sympathetic towards. I do know that this match sucked. I didn't like this match. Eventually, Sam Shaw gets a Steiner recliner on Anderson. Anderson uses his body to rev up the crowd, so I guess that makes Anderson the face, and then Anderson goes into his hope spot comeback. He gets, you know, a series of elbows and then a kind of sloppy and slow-developing swinging neck breaker, and then some quick arm work by Anderson, and the match is over.
Yeah, he gets him in the...
Which is an arm bar.
Is it an arm bar that he finishes with?
I think it's an arm bar. I didn't actually write down what he just tapped Shaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got, he did arm work.
It's
and
quick. It's quick. It's sudden.
Sam Shaw was the submission specialist, too.
Right.
That's the thing is that Sam
and
Shaw.
And he does a horrible, horrible, the recliner. It just didn't look.
That was weird. I don't know. The whole thing was weird. But
none of it really made sense. They're both kind of bad guys.
I think Gunner's the worst out of all of them.
Gunner's
the non-committal friend. Fuck that, man.
If I'm
Sam Shaw, I'm leaving the ring.
Well, Gunnar's got a match later. So, I mean, whatever. He's got to save.
Whatever. He's got a friend now. Or he did until he stabbed him in the damn heart.
I don't know that. I don't know that stabbing him in the heart would be exactly what happened.
Gunnar broke.
Maybe not being the best of buddies.
Roman Reigns School of Friendship.
Roman Reigns School of Friendship. Yeah. Yeah.
The Roman Reigns School of Friendship.
I love that it ends up Sam Shaw on the ground for absolutely no reason. Gunnar comes in and they just stand face to face. Stunned. Yeah. Just. And say, he doesn't go in and protect his buddy Sam Shaw, and he doesn't go in and do anything after the match is over with Sam Shaw. He's not like, hey buddy, come on man, let's get out of here. He goes in and stands face to face with Anderson and he's like, oh Anderson man, you, why didn't you trust me in the first place? What's wrong with you? Oh, you're an idiot. Well, why didn't you just trust me? You're an idiot. Yeah,
you shouldn't have done that. I wish you wouldn't hurt Sam Shaw.
Yeah, I don't understand why
you regret doing that. I wish you hadn't. What do we have after this? We have the Hardys have the idea of how to take tag team wrestling to another level.
Well, yeah. The 3D does that weird little promo, I guess, backstage.
Where they talk to the Hardys and they have an idea.
They had just talked to him and they're like, yes. Oh, this is a great idea. And then they show that old footage of Gail Kim getting beat down by Angelina Love after last week's
show. Do we have
show?
Commissioner Angle? And I didn't write down the commish.
Angle, yeah.
Angle explains that Angelina has not been
right.
Very good.
She's been disgusting.
She's been disgusting and not
he
becoming of. Yeah, not becoming of a champion.
She does not deserve this title match.
So she's going to get it.
But she's going to get it. Gail Kim came in and asked for it. But she, because of her behavior, she does not deserve it.
Right.
Because this is behavior-driven.
This is a behavior-driven company. Yes. So, in an effort to really put his foot down, then, Commissioner Angle does not allow Velvet Sky at ringside, right?
Of course not.
Okay. Because, she has... Angelina cheats up and down the place.
Yeah, no, he wouldn't let her there.
And
he
so, Angle... I like this about him.
His decision-making process
just kind of front to back.
Here's the twist, though. He actually didn't say anything about that.
Oh.
Yeah, she gets to hang out.
Oh, so she's going to be ringside.
Yeah.
But she's not going to do it. Well, okay, if she does anything, if she did something, especially if it's conspicuous, I'm sure Angle will march right out there to that show, and he will remove her, right?
Well, I mean, that's
she'll
the
have
way.
To go.
No, I mean, Angle is a firm hand.
Okay.
Maybe even an iron fist at times.
Oh, he's got iron plates and stuff in different places.
Right.
Yeah.
No is the answer, though.
Okay.
He will not be coming out or anything like that.
All right. Well, I got issues with the commish.
Yeah, issues with the commish.
I got commissues.
And then they have the weird, and I think I had a bigger problem with this than you did, the rude promo.
The Bobby Roode
in the middle of the show
in the day. It's just that these promos are set all over the place, and this promo in particular would have been fine if there were five others, like, or at least,
or a preface,
four others,
or
some
if it
sort
was
of
at
preface
the beginning
that said that, like, this is Bobby Roode from earlier today, or like earlier this week when we were setting up in the arena. But the only two people who talked about this match at all tonight were Magnus and Bobby Roode. And Magnus was a complete non-factor in this match. And Bobby Roode is, well, we'll get into Bobby Roode and Eric Young. And just really a classic finish from, was it Royal Rumble 1992 or 1993? We'll get into it. You know it. It's not a good... It's not so much a good finish as it is one that people remember.
It's not so much a finish.
Well, it is. Say. It's a way of finishing.
Okay.
It's a way of finishing.
All right.
It's not a good way. I mean, it's like shooting someone in a match. Okay. You shouldn't do that. That's not... The loser gets shot match is sort of anticlimactic.
There's nowhere
to go after that.
That's actually a really good match, depending on the gun.
Well, okay.
If you give him a 22, it's whatever.
Okay. Well, so do we get now? Oh, yeah. Bobby Roode's a man singularly motivated by his suspension. He got suspended for 7 weeks earlier in this year. I don't know if you heard, but Bobby Roode's really, 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 really upset about that.
Yeah, didn't like that.
Did not like that.
Yeah.
Hardys were in the ring. Yeah. They come to the ring. They chant their own names, getting the crowd to chant them. It makes Jeff feel electric about himself.
Yeah.
Dude, this enigmatic journey that he's on right now is on fire.
I don't have
time for you to poke holes in self-indulgence. Then the Dudleys come down.
Wait.
What?
My favorite part of their entire promo, the Hardy chant, and then Jeff Hardy tells whenever he's asking 3D to come out, he's like, come on down. And let's break this vision down.
Yeah.
And it's just,
this is not even about being champions.
It's a vision.
At least Bully Ray will come down and redirect us and make this once again about being champions.
Yeah.
Bully Ray really pulling this thing together for this entire angle, having to do most of the talking. For Jeff, just like his face paint, it's not about whether or not it's going to help him win anything at all. It's about this thing that he's doing, being cool. And he is doing it. So, Bully and Devon come to the ring. And they, articulate their part of the vision. They think it's pretty cool. And they need to get... They both want to be champions. The Dudleys say, we're getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And, the Hardys think it would be pretty cool for them to be champions again.
Yeah, the Hardys want to go ahead and be in champions. The Team 3D would like to be champions, and they kind of throw out the, it'd be cool. We're going to the Hall of Fame. We'd like to be champions at the same time. This whole thing would be neat. We put Dixie through a table.
Yes. Bully's still very high on the fact that he put Dixie through the table.
Yeah, and he's high on sharing the blame. We did it. We did all... collectively.
Well, this week it was just him and Devon.
Yeah, but I think he would have shared that further. Yeah, given yeah, an yeah, yeah.
If he could have.
Yeah, that just happened to be the person that was next to him.
I do like the idea of talent making matches with each other, and you don't need a authority figure of it. No, I like this. This
Bully
is how
Ray's been doing that for like 2 years now.
This is
though.
How wrestling used to be, though. It would be talent wants to have matches with each other. And, like, the announcer would be like, oh, wow, it looks like we're going to have this match right now. Like, we were watching Memphis Wrestling the other day. And, like, that's how Memphis Wrestling, that happened a lot.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. It makes it spontaneous. It makes it feel like anything can happen. It was nice. These guys want to compete against each other. And it doesn't matter that the Wolves can't speak because they come out. And in under a minute, they still manage to deliver just something deeply south of compelling on the microphone.
Yeah, 52 seconds, I believe, we got somewhere around there.
I mean, it just depends on where you start. That's why I said under a minute.
Yeah.
It was under 1 minute, but boy, it felt like three.
It felt like three.
It felt like a while. It felt like a long, bad promo.
Man, I love watching the Wolves in the ring. Gosh, I love watching the Wolves in the ring. And you know what makes me really... realize how much I love watching the Wolves in the ring.
Listening to the Hardys talk circles around them on the microphone?
Yeah. Or just seeing them out of the ring at any time.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Anytime I see them out of the ring, I'm like, oh, that's, please get back in the ring.
Here's the deal. If Jeff Hardy's crazy psycho willow babble sounds better than your ability to deliver a promo, you need to probably never talk ever. Yeah. Like, if I'd rather listen to Jeff Hardy... Or even just Rhino. Well, I mean, the thing with Rhino is it's only in doses. I don't know. I don't know if I can actually sign on that statement. I'm just throwing it out there at this point. All right. Mike Tenay meets with Dixie, who's in bed, and we get a montage of Dixie's extreme trauma with sad music. Like, we're supposed to feel sad for this woman who we're supposed to hate. We hate her so much. You know how much we hate her? We hate her so much that we wanted her through a table. We wanted her, you and me, all of us. We all hated her so much that gave a man, a grown man, a professional wrestler, carte blanche to take a woman into a wrestling ring and drive her through a table. And we've got sad music. We have montage music for Dixie Carter. And Dixie Carter, in the middle of this montage, where we're supposed to feel bad for her, where we're supposed to feel agony and deep sorrow. She says she will not change and she will get her revenge on Bully Ray and that Carters never forget.
Yeah.
And what the hell was this sequence?
I don't know. It seemed very Susie whenever she was saying the Carters never forget. Like the elephants? The elephants never forget? I don't know.
No, that's Horton Hears a Who.
Is that Horton Hears a Who?
That's Horton Hears a Who.
Yeah. Well,
the Who's are small.
The Who's are, oh.
I mean, like if Dixie Carter discovers tiny people on her and hears them and realizes that a person is a person no matter how small.
Yeah.
That would be
a Susie.
Dixie Hears a Who.
Dixie Hears a Who. I don't know, man. Here's the thing. She's at home. Blah, blah, blah. Went to the ER the next day. They're selling the two broken ribs
I mean, it's a good-looking montage. It just there's a difference between things looking good and things making sense in the context of the story you're trying to tell.
Well, but here's the thing. The only important thing that I feel like she said the entire time, two important things that she said the entire time. One, I'm going to concentrate on, I'm going to focus on business outside the ring. One.
Okay.
That's important. Two, the doctors.
Which she better.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that better be a shoot.
The doctors told me that the doctors told her that the injuries that she
were the equivalent of a car wreck.
Were the equivalent of a car wreck. Those are the two things that I think. Those are the only two things that you need to listen to out of the whole thing.
Well,
of course,
she's
Dixie. She's
going to
say she's going to come back. Blah blah blah. Yada yada yada. Who cares? But Bully Ray hits like a free or power bombs at the same velocity as a car wreck. Basically, and
you know what's funny about that is if she finds the ring to be too hard, she has no one but herself to blame with changing it back over to the six sides.
That's right,
because
yeah.
That was the whole Austin Aries complaint about the six-sided ring.
There's
is that
more,
it's a harder surface to bump on.
Yeah, there's
so if it actually cost her any pain, yeah. Just food for thought. I don't know. I don't know if that ended up actually. I don't know how much of this is true or not. I'm assuming most of it is exaggeration.
Yeah, I mean, it's wrestling. Who knows?
It's wrestling.
The I also liked her little surge thing at the end.
Yes, she calls the surge.
Surge, fluff my pillow.
Yes. Awesome. No, that's you're thinking of Spud. You gave her a British accent.
I know.
Okay. No, I'm just saying. Yeah, that was you went into
fluff my pillow.
Yeah, you went into.
That was my woman voice.
Oh.
Fluff my pillow. It wasn't.
She's still
I didn't
British.
Need to go English.
She sounds kind of gross, and she's still British.
Well.
But that's a whole different thing. Let's talk about the last Knockout Standing match. Hey, I want to give Taz and Mike Tenay big credit tonight. They found a way to not be horn dogs through an entire women's match.
I know, it's crazy, right?
That was really nuts. I think they only said one or two horn doggy things the entire match, and there were a couple points where I was like, the door's open.
Yeah,
and they didn't go through, and it was congrats guys. And, yeah. You know, as grown adults, it's impressive that you can talk about two women working their ass off in this match and not be horn dogs during it. And they did work their ass off in this match.
Oh my goodness,
this angle is stale. I find this angle stale, but I find the work to be good, enough to the point where if I had to watch another Angelina and Gail Kim match, I would be neutral trending positive just because of the fact that the in-ring work is good. It's just the angle has no juice at all. We've seen everything at this point. We've seen Angelina win. We've seen Gail win. Velvet has not broken off from Angelina and doesn't seem to be angry with Angelina at all, even though last week they were both costing each other the title.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not revisited. And nope. In fact, it's actually the opposite.
Velvet's helpful.
Velvet Sky is...
Velvet's extremely helpful.
Yeah, she's...
Completely loyal.
Yeah.
True friend, Velvet Sky.
Laying it down, and Angle's not doing anything about it.
No.
Laying it down.
Kurt could not make it to this show, apparently.
I try to keep a counter on... four. Five. Five. Five Velvet interferences. I keep a counter on those.
Yeah,
now.
There were a lot of them.
Five major ones, though. It wasn't
wow.
Just little... Oh, I grab somebody's foot or something like that. No, she's in the ring.
She was helping with
up.
The chair. She was throwing Gil Kim in the ring.
Yeah.
She set up a chair. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It was.
She was going to hit, like, the in-your-face at one point.
Yeah. I don't understand how I understand that Angle's like, oh, she shouldn't have this match, but Gail Kim asked for it. Okay, Gail Kim asked for it, but why'd you put why is there this stipulation on it? Why would you allow just a beat up match? And if you're gonna do that, why wouldn't you come out? Or
here's the only way I can see this making sense at this point.
Special ref?
No. So next week we have Angelina upset with Velvet Sky because she felt like Velvet Sky cost her the match because of that last spot there where Gail Kim pushes Velvet Sky into the turnbuckle. It hits Angelina. This is Angelina logic.
Yeah.
It costs Angelina the match. But Velvet Sky turns around and goes, are you kidding me? I was doing nothing but helping you left, right, and center throughout the entire match, setting her up as the face for a split up of the Beautiful People.
Which I would love to see, because I saw some old Velvet Sky stuff that was actually entertaining. Whenever she moves around and runs around and like is energetic and doing things.
I guess I would have to see that again.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying that she's amazing.
We'll see, but I don't know. I haven't looked at the spoilers or the look aheads in a while. I don't think that happens.
I forget them as soon as I read them. Yeah, on purpose. But
it's kind of, I don't know. I find it's just better to take this 1 week at a time and treat it as it is.
Once again, they get the better than divas.
Yeah, well, yeah, they sure do because they are the Botox injection, that kick.
Nice.
Right, that's great. Right to the chair to Gail Kim. Looks real good. And then the spot later where Gail Kim hits kind of like a Northern Lights type top rope suplex back body drop thing onto a chair.
Yeah.
That Angelina sells for the pin. The 10 count.
Yeah, 10 count. Yeah, because it's a last knockout
stand. Hey, if your back went on a chair, you probably shouldn't be standing up anytime soon.
Yeah, and it was one of those where Velvet Sky couldn't do much more about it.
Why not? What happens to Velvet? Well, she got bumped.
She's standing outside.
Yeah, she got bumped outside.
At that point,
she can't pick up.
The knockout is already knocked out. So like,
yeah, well, I mean, why can't she come in and pick up Angelina?
Can you just pick her up though?
Would that stop her? Why would that be cheating?
Could she go weekend at Bernie's with it?
Yeah, she just picks up Angelina and
fights with her.
Yeah, throws her lifeless body at Gail Kim.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I could go for that. Angelina is the weapon.
This is the problem. This is also why you need to get rid of Velvet Sky. Velvet Sky did not need to be ringside this match unless it's for sort of the storyline I detailed earlier.
She really didn't because Angelina did a good job of carrying the match on her own.
Oh, yeah. This is a good match.
I'm not normally high on Angelina Love.
She works
You're not
as a
gonna
heel.
Hear that.
I'm very, like, she's like 2.5 out of 5 stars. She's like a real middle of the road wrestler for me.
I've read where they have the Beautiful People have matches against each other and tag team in indie things outside of TNA still to this day. And I'm wondering, like, in the matches against each other, is it? I'm guessing it's Angelina.
Velvet's the face and
Angelina's
the heel. Angelina's
the heel every time. Yeah. I wonder if Velvet could even pull off the heel against Angelina.
Not really.
Against
not
a lot of people,
really.
She could. But not against Angelina, because Angelina just looks... I mean, you look at her and you're like Cruella de Vil. You know what I mean? It just kind of...
Oh.
I guess somebody... You could be thought of as hot.
All right,
whatever.
What comes after this? Are there any more backstage segments before we get to... we do get the announcement that Christy Hemme is pregnant.
Yeah, Christy Hemme pregnancy. We get...
Oh, MVP comes out, and they have a heavily scrubbed audio for this MVP promo.
Yeah, where he's just basically saying that he was supposed to get a shot at Slammiversary.
Right.
I'm just reminding y'all it was me, but my boy went and got it for me, so it's all good. And we're not scared of anybody.
Teasing tension. Teasing tension, though, with Lashley. It's subtle. It's subtle tension teasing.
Yeah.
Because MVP made the speech kind of about himself.
Yeah.
Lashley, not really sure how to react to any of this stuff. I don't think anyone really kind of explained to him what we're going for. This was a promo built around nuance, and this crowd was not really, if anything, kind of on board with the fact that they had just seen Lashley kick. It's hard to tell because they scrubbed the audio so much.
Yeah,
I know at one point they were saying something and doing the clap, 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 clap chant.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they were saying before they did the clap, 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 clap.
Yeah, I couldn't make that out.
Yeah, but you could see them mouthing it. There was one guy.
It seemed like they turned on him a little bit more. I think they were with Lashley.
Until he started going after Aries.
Until he went after Aries, yeah. And it seemed like at that moment, that's when the clap, clap, clap started. That's also when you saw the double bird.
Yes. Double bird.
That you.
Birds in stereo, baby.
Yeah.
But that was a good promo. I thought MVP really knocked it out of the park on this one. Kenny King is the Eric Rowan of this group at this point.
Yeah, if it falls apart, you're gone. you know what? And he's good. I actually like Kenny King a lot.
Eric Rowan's not bad. It's just
they
sort of exist. They don't, but they definitely exist.
Yeah.
What happened after that?
Basically, at this point, all we're going to get is...
This is the Six Sides of Steel, right?
Right.
There's not much to break down about right Six Sides of Steel.
They say right before it...
climb the steel, make the deal.
No, it's first to escape, which was the
That's
first I heard
climb the steel,
that.
Make the deal, yeah. man. Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Climb the steel, make the
make
deal.
Make the deal. It was the first I had heard about it, which was kind of annoying, because I'm like, oh, it's going to be a steel cage match. Oh, it's just...
An escapes-only steel cage match. So everyone, the psychology of this becomes really stupid and includes a spot where all three of the baby faces have submission holds on all three of the heels. There's a bunch of gimmick spots. There's like a corner off-the-shoulder suplex thing where like two guys team up to suplex a third guy.
One guy gets
suplexed by the two other guys.
Power bombs two guys and then, out of the corner.
Yeah.
And they do that at the same time with the other guy, and they get a This Is Awesome chant out of
that. Yes, yeah. It's just like one of those cool.
They also have the clothesline-a-thon at one point where they're all in
the
corner.
The sequence where everyone's going for finishers, and Mike Tenay is too busy plugging shit to call like a key sequence wherein everyone is going for finishers. Fucking way to go, Mike Tenay.
I also love the fact that they were doing their submissions whenever they had three submissions going at the same time. Two of them were trying to tap out.
Yes.
In an escape match.
Yep.
Point like Storm's over there trying to tap. It's not going to work. You can't tap
out. It just makes the Storm character seem ridiculous, yeah. But you know.
I don't know.
This match existed.
Yeah, it reminded me of I kept writing down and thinking of I called it the Ant Farm match, because you have like these weird they're on top of the ropes, but there's still a bunch of cage there. So you can kind of, it's like looking through the glass at these guys kind of trying to climb up and pulling on each other.
I guess what it reminds me more of is like Super Mario Brothers, like for Super Nintendo, that first castle where you had to climb the fence and you can punch through the fence and spin around.
And it spins around. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. That's
either way, it was this weird sort of...
The psychology becomes really stupid because no one's trying to get pins. So like what should be happening is you should have heels trying to escape and then... You know, faces trying to get pins and that sort of thing. And then even if you want to do this finish where it's not clear who touched the ground first, they did the two friends. I don't really see a reason why either Eric Young or Bobby Roode need to be having a match with one another. And they certainly, neither one needs to turn heel at this point. Like, it doesn't make any sense. If you're going to have Bobby Roode go up against Bobby Lashley, it makes no sense for Bobby Roode to become the heel. And even if MVP is going to become the champ, it makes no sense for Bobby Roode to become a heel. And I don't really want to see an Eric Young heel run. So
yeah,
this match next week, in which they've already had a match and Bobby Roode has won, and presumably Bobby Roode will have to win again. Why is Bobby Roode keep getting these wins over Eric Young? I don't get it.
Well, pushing Bobby Roode.
Well, I get that, but like...
Why does it have to be EY?
Why do we keep running over EY? This is a guy you just built up to main event status, and you kind of... You've turned him into this perpetual also-ran.
I mean, I don't know. He's got his own thing now, and own show. Maybe I don't know.
You know? I'm just saying. I thought it was weird. Any other thoughts on this show here before we go for the wrap?
Well, here... I guess, I don't know, man.
Finishing strong here tonight.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say something about that match. It's, It's just kind of...
What's to say? Like, it's just kind of there. Like, especially with that finish. Like, I had assumed that Bobby Roode was going to win. So when I saw that Eric Young ties Bobby Roode and we have to watch the video replay where you can't see either guy touching the floor... I mean, that was the real problem, is that like they bring us back to a video replay and they just show the two clips of both sides, but the camera angles doesn't show the other one. So when Eric Young is hitting the ground, we only see Eric Young hitting the ground. We don't see Bobby Roode at all, and did it with Bobby Roode. We see Bobby Roode hit the ground with no Eric Young in the
well,
shot.
For that matter, the coverage of it was horrible, or the edit of it was horrible, because you get halfway through the introductions, you get a commercial break. About... Four minutes in, you get another commercial break. Now, this commercial break comes right after they've had the clothesline-a-thon, and nobody's even tried to climb at all. And then once one person tries to climb, everybody goes up all at the same time.
Yeah, why wouldn't Magnus be trying to get out, or James Storm trying to get out?
I don't know. But all of them go up at the exact same time. And then whenever they're coming... as soon as they all get up to the top rope, they go to commercial again. You come back. Aries is already over the side, getting pulled back in. Storm is all the way over the side, getting pulled back
in. This match felt, like, to your point, the edits made this match feel unimportant.
Yeah.
And this match just had, like, no anything to it.
Well,
it seems silly. Like, this is where TNA sort of, they just overbooked stuff. All that needed to happen here was a quality 15-minute main event between Bobby Roode and Austin Aries for the number one contendership.
Because that was the chant as soon as you started.
That's what they want to see. People want to see Bobby Roode and Austin Aries, have them do it as both faces and just have it be a good and competitive match.
Yeah.
That's all that needed to happen.
Yeah.
You know, the winner, if Austin Aries can win, he gets another shot at this. You can have him say, you know, like, I'm going to try to get my X Division belt back, or I'm going to get my X Division belt back. But right now, I've got a chance to be the number one contender, and I get to go up against Bobby Roode.
Right.
Which is something we talked about. We were talking about it not being a fluke the other week.
Yeah.
And this week, you have Bobby Roode beat Austin Aries, and you could have Aries go and say to Bobby Roode, hey, you know what? Last week wasn't a fluke either. Boom. Mutual respect. You've cemented that. You've actually wrapped up that storyline.
Right.
And you had a much better main event, even if it was a cage match. You could have a cage match between Austin Aries and Bobby Roode. That would have been much hotter.
Well, because a one-on-one cage escape match makes sense.
No, I don't even want an escape match.
If it was an escape match, you could have gotten away with it.
Faces don't escape. Faces don't escape. They get pinfalls or submissions in the cage. You have them have a cage match. Have it be a little... If you really feel like it needs to be... I think that you could have given this crowd Austin Aries versus Bobby Roode, and they would have been totally happy. You don't need a stipulation at all.
You don't need one, but you're going to get one. It's TNA.
But
especially on Hardcore Justice.
This is where they completely overbooked themselves. And yeah, it's Hardcore Justice. Right. So there you go.
Here's a question.
Okay.
I
got answers.
How do you feel about us getting the exact same promo from last week, the exact same
James Storm
promo from last week, only change being that we now have the Great Sonata next week, premiering next week?
Coming
to a theater near you.
The weeks bleed into the days, which bleed into the nights for me, so seeing this promo a second time didn't affect me at all.
I
just don't have a conception of time or any sort of short-term... There's no long-term storage that goes on up here. It just doesn't happen.
Memento happening here.
Yeah, it's essentially memento. Limited intake is what I'm saying.
I'm just saying, like, especially if you're gonna make a big reveal next week with a new Sonata.
Speaking of big reveals, what was the big surprise that we were supposed to be getting this week from Taz?
And
it was important, and he couldn't tell if
last week,
vegetable, or mineral, and it was a really big deal.
He can't
tell us
about it.
He was going to reveal it, but he couldn't tell us about it.
It's huge.
And it's huge.
It's huge.
And you know what's interesting? I just thought about this. If they had already cut commentary for this show, they recut it because this week they did have the "we're so happy to be in our Monday night time slot." They did redo. They must have redone the audio or done the audio just this week.
Or in our Thursday night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Into our new Wednesday night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, time slot.
So thrown off.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
So
I
don't know. What was that surprise?
The weird thing is he did not give us a surprise.
We talked about it last week. Like, I mean, the way Taz made it, it was like there was going to be a fucking reveal of, I don't know, the Nature Boy Buddy Rogers or somebody showing up.
Right.
Hollywood John Tatum. the triumphant return of Hollywood John Tatum.
Sting.
Sting is back.
Yeah. Back forever.
Woo!
Forever and ever.
Nothing like more Sting.
I don't know.
That's what TNA needs.
It could have possibly been the tag team.
I guess, but
this
that's,
tag team trilogy
he couldn't even
thing
tell
that
us
they've
what
got
that was
coming up.
Be.
I don't know.
Yeah, he couldn't. Like, the way Taz made it sound like it was like there was going to be a big name acquisition. I have no idea.
I can't tell you about it because it's so important. But if it's that important, it seems like it would have made an impact on Impact this week.
Right.
And
here he is, Commissioner Diamond Dallas Page. I'm trying to even think of the way he built it up, it would have to be the huge return of a former main eventer or the acquisition of a current main eventer.
Right. I mean, the only two things that he could announce would be the Great Sonata.
That's not news.
Right. Or the tag team trilogy, which is what I'm calling it, because I don't know what
the
else
the tag team series. You know what this is? You know what this is? This is their attempt at a Bound for Glory series.
Yeah.
This is what they are going to call the Bound for Glory series.
Well,
this year.
And
because it's a round robin thing insofar as it's a round robin tournament.
Yeah, between 3D, Hardys and Wolves.
First, and Angle's at the first to two.
I don't like that. Now
he said that, I'm like, then match order means everything, doesn't it?
I don't like that.
That's kind of a weird thing to say.
But we'll see where that goes. Who knows? I guess going from that, though. But the other thing that they're doing,
it's like whoever goes the second night wins, right?
Whoever
goes first and second night has like a huge, huge advantage. Yeah. And that's like,
it's over.
Yeah.
But the other thing that they're doing, I think, that kind of replaces BFG, which they're going to do. It's just they're doing it, overseas, and it's probably not going to be the same Bound for Glory that we're used to. It's not going to be.
Well, it's definitely not, because they haven't even had a round-robin tournament this year. Yeah,
exactly.
They've got nothing.
There's none of that. But they're putting out the One Night Only coming up on pay-per-view, the World Cup style, where they're drafting and they're going to have almost round-robin-y stuff going on. And, that ought to be cool. I don't know. Other than that, I guess that's the news of everything that's gone on in this entire episode.
That's it. Bully Ray may be done with the company, but I don't think so.
I don't think that's news.
Yeah, it's just like with the TNA stuff, because apparently they've been extended through the end of the year. I want to get some finality before we actually kind of break that down. It seems stupid. Wrestling news is weird because it's hard to get kind of clear information on things, and I just don't want to. Why report on things that are not completely confirmed as fact as of right now? Yeah. So, all right, man. I think that is going to do it for this week. Get all of your wrestling news, information, and reviews on all things wrestling over at voicesofwrestling.com. We want to thank the good people at voicesofwrestling.com, and especially Rich for his help with technical stuff this week. He remarried the episode of last week and the week prior's stipulation together. So if you want to play stipulation binge and listen to like 3 hours of this, you can. I guess it's almost like 3 hours and 45 minutes. It's a lot of wrestling podcasting to be listening to, but it's honestly less painful than watching Impact, because the Zip episode was not a very good episode.
Yeah. Horrible.
This is not a good episode. This wasn't so much a good episode as it was long. Ladies and gentlemen, have a good week. And until the next one, cheers. Rock and roll, dope, and fucking in the streets.
In a world of 1 million wrestling podcasts, there is a new shining star with great interviews, analysis, music, and me, Matt Kuhn, on Total Engagement. Go to any podcast platform to listen today.